It's Wednesday, April 27th, 2006. This is Ellen Morey. I'm interviewing Mr. Sam Smith of the University News Service for the 50th anniversary history of SIUE.
Sure.
I know.
Do I need to get up closer? Or?
No, it's very sensitive. See the little green light flash?
Okay.
It's...
This was summer of 1990, and he had completed 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's based on the... there was actually a small book published about that decade. Did you see that? Do you have a copy of that? A decade of challenge, a decade of achievement?
Yes, book about Earl Lazarson. I don't have a copy of it, but I took notes on it from the archives.
This is an executive summary of that.
That was very, very good, I thought.
Yes.
Were you in charge of that?
Well, I was involved in it, yes.
Okay. I thought it was wonderful, myself.
We did a lot of the work for it. The articles here, some of them are very personal. The Man Who Made It Happen, Education, a Partnership, Impacts of Public Service, Higher Education for Minorities, The President at Home, has some very personal information about him. What Makes Him Tick, that's also very personal. And The University in the 21st Century.
Is this the speech that he gave at a national convention of metropolitan universities? I wonder.
I'm not sure.
It is. Because I interviewed Frank Akers.
Yes.
And I think he was part of writing that speech.
I don't think so.
No, maybe this is what this is. Oh no, that's SIUE in the 21st
Greg
century.
Conroy wrote this article.
Okay.
He was in our shop.
Yes.
And now this.
Well, I'm glad you told me about
this
that.
This is just excellent because particularly when you get into the executive summary of the book itself had not been released yet. It says here at the end that it would be available. The complete report, A Decade of Challenge, A Decade of Achievement, will soon be available through the Office of the President. It covers so many things that were important to that decade. His philosophy, of course, his goals and objectives, and how he made things happen.
Yes.
Some very important quotes in here from him. The one in particular I was looking for. I'm honest with people and I expect them to be honest with me, and I do not tolerate less than the best in a professional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That was an excellent characterization of how he approached things. I was going to refer to some of that later and after we get into this. I don't know how you want to proceed.
Well, I wanted to start with how you happened to come to SIU and why you stayed after you had experience in the job.
Sure.
And
okay. I was trained in journalism at the University of Illinois. And the focus was on a newspaper career, although even at that time, I had been somewhat associated with the public information office at the university, and I had friends there, and I'd always kind of thought that that'd be a nice place to work. But when I completed my degree in journalism, I went to newspapers and had a newspaper career for 25 years.
Yes.
Then in 1972, I'd been several different papers, but I was part owner of the Metropolis Planet, and my partner wanted to sell his share there was a job opening here at the university at SIUE, and the University News Service, the assistant director position actually was open. I was told about it by Bill Lyons, who at that time was heading up communications for Carbondale and the system, actually. He was, I think he was over both campuses at one time. He told me about the position here, and I interviewed for it and was able to get it. The next year, my boss, the director, was reassigned to develop a 10th anniversary celebration.
Mm-hmm.
1975 was the 10th anniversary of the permanent campus. And I was named acting director after he was reassigned. And in 1976, I was promoted to director. And I enjoyed the work here. I just enjoyed being at the university, working with highly educated people, and I just considered it really the big leagues. I thought it was a really nice place to be, and I enjoyed the relationships that we developed here. And
did you find that having edited several papers helped you in your new position?
Oh, absolutely. I think journalism was excellent training for the position at News Services, mm-hmm. which News Services at that time was involved in a lot of things, and more as time went by. When I first joined News Service, we were responsible for photo service as well, and for the information center in the university center.
Yeah.
We had sports information. And later, in a reorganization, we became responsible for graphics and printing. At one time, we even had... am I going too fast?
No.
At one time, we had... for a short time, we had responsibility for conferences and institutes.
Oh, my.
And there was we had a film unit. We produced 16-millimeter films, and that unit was available for departments if they wanted to mm-hmm. have a film about their operations or about their whatever. They were available. And there were several films produced at that time. We did two different films on the MRF. You know what the MRF
is? Yes, I know that Steve Kerber's working on a really good thing on that.
Good.
For the anniversary.
Good. Mm-hmm. And there was a general information film done. There was one for nursing. There was one for... let's see, I can't remember. There's actually, I think, probably a dozen different films produced at that time. And later it became a victim of budget cutting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember just exactly how many years the film part went on, but I'd say at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reorganization in 1977, I believe, was a year that involved bringing on a new... prior to that, I reported directly to the president
mm-hmm.
as director of news services. At that time, a new person was brought in. Jim Buck was named mm-hmm. vice president for... I think the first title was public affairs. Later he became, duties were expanded to development and public affairs. So after that, I reported to him, and we picked up, it was later then that we picked up some additional responsibilities, graphics and printing. There were a number of different things considered. A consultant was brought in at one point who recommended that we have responsibility for the radio station, which didn't happen, but thank goodness. I was spread pretty thin then.
Yes.
We still had sports information, which was a growing concern and mm-hmm. responsibility. Is that enough about me and my personal getting started and why
sure,
I stayed and so
right.
forth?
I would like to ask you, I know when I interviewed Doug Ader, he said that you had one tip you had given him was always remember people's names.
Yes.
And so I was wondering, what is your secret for doing that?
Actually, I'm very poor at it.
He thought you were wonderful, and he said you really remembered.
I really worked at it. I made myself do it, but it was never easy for me for some mm-hmm. reason. I always admired people who could do that so easily. Paul Simon, for example, uh-huh. Senator Simon, would see somebody he hadn't seen for 10 years and know their first name.
Uh-huh.
Paul Powell was another one in the legislature. There are many politicians that have developed that art, and I think it is an art. I worked at it very hard, and I guess I was fairly successful at it, but it was never easy for me.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm finding that my memory is fading. I really have to have some clues, and I brought along some things to help me in case I get lost.
Wow, that's good. Well, with all these responsibilities, when I look through the press files, you covered the big stories and the little, and even the, it seemed
yes.
like very small stories. So the press files are just enormous.
Yes, yes.
And I wondered, I wonder how you hired people in your shop. You had Tommy Walter.
Yes.
Did Mildred Arnold do some writing for you,
too? Yes, she
too?
Did. She reported to us. She was she was the editor of the uh-huh. alumnus. She'd always been involved with the alumni. She was here when I came. She was a part of the operation. We had several people along the way, and we always looked for journalism graduates mm-hmm. primarily, and people who would be outstanding writers.
Uh-huh.
I had a little, you ask about how I selected people, I had a little measure that I used that worked pretty well for me. You go through the conventional interview processes and all that, but at the end, I would ask the candidate to write a brief autobiography
mm-hmm.
in his or her own handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a half page, it could be a page. I'm mm-hmm. just talking basically a brief summary of their autobiography. And it was amazing how revealing that was.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have time to type it and make changes
yes.
and edit and so forth. Mm-hmm. And these would come back with numerous errors in writing and grammar. It was just mm-hmm. extremely revealing, and we couldn't afford to hire someone who was going to have those kinds of difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an excellent way, and it was one case in particular that I remember where a person had been highly recommended to us.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an excellent interview, very articulate, very nice presentation, an attractive person, great personality. Great ability to talk and mm-hmm. discuss things, and but when I asked her to do that, it came back, there was about 3/4 of a page, it came back, I think it had something like 8 or 10 grammatical errors. It was very, very poorly done. And, of course, I didn't hire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 30 minutes after she left my office, I had a call from one of the vice presidents wanting to know why I had not hired so-and-so. And I said, well, I think I can show you.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty upset. He said, I think you're going to have to. So I just took that piece of paper up to him,
mm-hmm.
showed it to him. He said, what's this? I said, it's her autobiography she wrote herself as a part of the interview. And he said, she wrote this?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, she did. He said, well, enough said.
Yeah.
And it was just so amazing to me how it was so revealing.
Mm-hmm.
But was there another part of your question on that?
No, I just wondered how you picked people.
Yeah. You, in your approach to me, you said, as I talked about what are your views on turning points in history. I thought that was interesting,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's very important, it's significant in history to look at what I consider turning points.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe the first one in my mind was the MRF.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people wouldn't think of that as being an important turning point,
mm-hmm.
but it was an uplift for the university when it was first developed. It was basically a 10-year program. For the first few mm-hmm. years, it was extremely important to the university in terms of identification, being known
mm-hmm.
regionally, nationally even, and to this day, people still remember that this is the mm-hmm. place where the MRF was. Then there were problems with it. It went down, and I think that was definitely a turning point when it was dropped. The administration at that time, this was after John mm-hmm. Rimmelman died. I just think if John Rimmelman had lived, that we would still have an MRF. There was a master plan for it, which called for major facilities,
mm-hmm. That's right.
And modern facilities, a very glamorous plan for that facility.
Yes.
And I think he somehow would have made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was so dedicated to it that he would have made sure it happened. So to me, that was a turning point. When Earl Azarson became president, he was determined to bring about improvements in yes. on the academic side of the university. This details
mm-hmm.
In this summary in here, it details the things that he did in terms of the academic side. His emphasis was on excellence, and one of the programs that he introduced was the Excellence in Undergraduate Education
mm-hmm.
Fund. There were a number of others, and if you'd like, I'll go into detail on it.
Sure.
They're in here. Advancing Educational Excellence, that embraced a number of different new approaches and programs, offering opportunity through access, encouraging student achievement and development, faculty and staff growth and development, providing more effective public service, fiscal matters, personnel concerns and facilities, institutional development, enacting the university's values.
Mm-hmm.
The rather new mission statement in connection with that. And under each of those, there's a lot of detail.
Mission statement.
A lot of detail.
Mm-hmm.
He he was not totally successful in what he tried to do, but I think he had a major impact mm-hmm. on the university. The faculty was was very disappointed with some of his approaches. I have an article here that you may have seen. I don't know if you've seen this or not. It shows some of the reaction to his approaches. Mm-hmm. That was a survey of the through the Faculty Senate. That was published in the Post-Dispatch, which shows that the faculty in particular were very, very unhappy with mm-hmm. with him and with Barbara Teeters, his vice president, provost. But they prevailed. Lazarson prevailed, and I think the bottom line is that whether you liked him or not, you have to acknowledge that he made dramatic improvements
yes.
in the university, academically, financially. Mm-hmm. He went through years of extremely tight budgets when, mm-hmm. through no fault of his, the legislature was cutting back mm-hmm. on budgets, and he had to run a tight ship, mm-hmm. which he did. He was good at that.
Yes.
Some people said he left a bloody trail. But he prevailed, and I think the bottom line, after 10 years of that, he was considered a tremendous success. And was recognized nationally, and in here there are kudos from Kenneth Shaw, who wrote this when he was president of the University of Wisconsin system after mm-hmm. having been here, and at Carbondale, and as president of the system, SIU system. Senator Simon.
Yeah.
The president of the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, Alan Ostar, mm-hmm. Governor Thompson, Senator Dixon. Those are just some of the mm-hmm. Tributes that came to him, recognizing his success in bringing about reform here and development of a growing and academically successful university. So that was definitely a turning point. His leadership was a turning point in the university. Another turning point, which was actually part of his administration, was the development of recruiting mm-hmm. and on-campus housing because of increasing enrollment. Mm-hmm. The university went through a period when recruiting was almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very cavalier attitude here that the doors were open and all you had to do was show up and the students would come. But then enrollment started declining in the 90s, or the 80s. It started declining in the 80s. And it was a very difficult challenge to overcome. And there was a task force established to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
I was a member of that task force. David Werner headed that up.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I think the university is still benefiting from the work of that task force in establishing recruiting strategies and which reached out to the community and the state and the region. Of course, then as more students came, we were going into a period when there was a gasoline shortage at that time also. And commuting was no longer in favor.
Uh-huh.
Students we're beginning to look for places to live near campus.
Mm-hmm.
The only on-campus housing we had was in the apartments at Tower Lake.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing how controversial it was just getting that first residence hall approved. Of course, it had to go through the state levels of approval and the state funding, and it was not an easy challenge. But
was this in the legislature where it met particular difficulty, or with the Illinois Board of Higher Education?
Board of Higher Education primarily.
Okay.
Because this had been pretty much established as a commuter institution,
mm-hmm.
and it was definitely a right turn from mm-hmm. that point. A lot of people thought it was going to be a white elephant to put up on-campus housing. And at that time, I remember Western Illinois University was closing one of their high-rise dorms because students were not coming there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a controversial issue, but Lazarson persisted and prevailed, and after the first residence hall was built, it obviously became, everyone became aware that it was a plus for the university, and since then, of course, it's a matter of record that two more were built, and now a fourth one is in the planning stages. So I think that was a significant turning point.
Were you one of the people who worked with the Board of Higher Education?
Not directly.
You think it was Earl Lazarson himself?
Yes, he did. He had people who assisted him, but he was the main one who mm-hmm. Represented the university at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the legislature and the Board of Higher Education.
Okay.
And I think that, that was a period of tight budgets, and one of your questions later on was, I think, about something about, did we get you asked about the political status of the university. I think that his leadership was significant in that area. He definitely fought for the university, and I think it paid off.
Mm-hmm. I know I've seen in the files that he I don't know who, he wrote newspaper columns, or he had columns published under his name. In the Edwardsville Intelligencer and different.
They were written in our office.
Different papers, and that he organized to raise taxes. He organized groups to community groups to raise tax press for a tax increase.
Yeah. Mm. Judy Meyer was working in our office. She's the one who wrote those inside columns. prior to that, the president's office had always had a speechwriter and someone who would undertake special writing projects. That was Pete Simpson when John Rendleman was president. He later was transferred to our office and worked out of our office until he left on disability. And after he left, we hired Judy Meyer for that responsibility.
I know he worked for Senator Vidalabhin.
Yes.
Too, and so sometimes you would have a letter from Vidalabhin written by him, and then a letter from Rendleman back to Vidalabhin written by him.
Right. Pete was an interesting person. He was very, very talented in terms of writing.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great resource for John Rendleman, I think, at the time, in the busy early days of the university. Then I think another turning point, and I've referred to this indirectly in other things that I've said, but I think it's maybe could be pulled out as a turning point, would be the leadership changes.
Yes.
Those were turning points in the university. Well, you've already mentioned John Rentelman. I think if he had lived, this would have been a much different university. He had a lot of leverage at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
He was even being considered, apparently, as a candidate for governor himself at one mm-hmm. point, as I understand it. As we said earlier, Lazarson represented the university politically at the state level, was very effective at it, but it was a period of tremendous challenge when it didn't mm-hmm. matter how tough you were, it was still a challenge during those budget cutting days. And then Camp Shaw was only here for a couple of years yeah. and went on to Carbondale. But I think that through all of that, the university was highly respected at the state level. I think we were treated as well as anyone,
okay.
as well as any university
mm-hmm.
in the state. There might be some exceptions to that, but mm-hmm. I think that's my general feeling about it, that there was equity in terms of we got our share.
Mm-hmm.
We had to fight for it.
Okay.
And I think if those leaders had not fought, we would not have received as much support as we got. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very interested in leadership, and I know John Rentelman, I've thought of writing something separately on him sometime
mm-hmm.
and talking about establishing democratic traditions in a mm-hmm. university
mm-hmm.
and participatory traditions mm-hmm. in the university and,
yes.
and his skills as a, he had speech writers, but he was also, had a good mm-hmm. sense of humor.
Absolutely,
which I think is wonderful, and he was pretty good on the stump as
yes.
a lawyer.
Yes, correct. All that's correct.
I thought of, and I also think he was loyal. I mean, he took the rap for the Stone House.
Yes,
he didn't say, oh no, it wasn't my idea. He said, mm-hmm. I gave him bad advice.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yes.
And then one of the. I've thought of putting together a little booklet of documents from the history of university. And one of the things I thought I'd put in was his press conference on the shoeboxes. Because
yes.
I thought that was excellent. Yeah. Today you wouldn't have a politician
yes.
opening up like that to the press.
Yes.
I think it's just amazing.
Yes.
So yes. Do you have anything to add to those?
Well, I wasn't here at that time, but I was very familiar with the situation because...
You were an editor.
I was at Metropolis editing the paper, and and I also had a close association with Bill Lyons at Carbondale,
mm-hmm.
the communications director there. We still have a Southern Illinois Editorial Association, which Bill Lyons pretty much created, which is made up of editors of all the newspapers in
mm-hmm.
Southern Illinois, and that association still exists, and it's still housed in the communications office at Carbondale. So I was very close to what was going on. I was very much aware. Paul Powell was from our area, from Vienna, and I knew him personally, and so I was intensely interested in whatever he was up to. What you said about John Rowan was absolutely correct. I just think that he had so much energy, and charisma and leadership ability that he could almost make anything happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he could, on the spur of the moment, I mean, he could make things happen. It was just, I remember one time we had a series of seminars. Do you remember those?
Yes.
What were those called? And they were in the, let's see.
They were in the Abbott Blythe.
I think.
In Abbott Auditorium.
Yeah, but anyway, there were a series of issues that were discussed, and Pete Simpson had written a speech for him to give, I think, in connection with at least the introduction of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this so well that John started more or less reading the speech. I mean, he wasn't a person who just would read it word for word, but he was following the speech. And all of a sudden he said, "What the hell?" He just threw it down, threw it aside, and talked. And it was, of course, the audience just roared, and he was so effective in situations mm-hmm. like that. One time at commencement, we were having commencement out at the MRF site
mm-hmm.
in the tent, and a thunderstorm was coming up. And of course, we were keeping in close touch with the weather service, and we knew the weather was very iffy, very, very iffy. And all of a sudden, it just appeared that the storm was right there at almost the edge of the campus, lightning and so forth. And we just getting started, and John Runnelman jumped up and he says, "Let's get the hell out of here." And of course everybody just almost panicked and took off. But it was...
So did people head inside, or was that the end of commencement that year?
I think that we came to various places on campus.
Yes.
There had been some strategies worked out on
uh-huh.
in advance, so it wasn't bedlam. I mean, there was some direction on what to do, but
uh-huh.
He made a very spur of the moment decision that he'd had enough of that storm. So, where are we?
Oh, we're talking about leadership, and you mentioned John Rendleman. And then you mentioned Ken Shaw, and then you mentioned Earl Lazarson. And I asked you to go back and talk a little bit more about John Rendleman.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, his departure was a tremendous loss to the university, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
I just think that things might have worked out the same in the end. I don't know, but I think that he was getting us there faster
mm-hmm.
Than most leaders mm-hmm. would have. He was so dynamic, and
mm-hmm.
I think the faculty worked with him, and
yep.
He was just a pleasure to work with, and
mm-hmm.
tough situations, tough challenges, but he was able to deal with them. So it was a terrible loss, and I think that for the next few years, we had good leaders, but they were just more or less
mm-hmm.
Taking care of things, trying to keep from slipping.
Yes.
And meanwhile, the state was starting to cut budgets and
mm-hmm.
so forth. And so I think that Earl Lazarson came on board at the right time to run a tight ship and to strive for excellence in everything that we did.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough. I mean, and he has some comments in here about how he dealt with that when it came to. I would urge you to look through this, because he talks about getting people to accept what he wanted done. It was not easy. You know, for example, the weekend university meant
mm-hmm.
that the faculty had to work. Nights and weekends were a new approach, And they were not happy about that. I don't blame them. But he persisted. And
I wonder if the faculty would feel the same about that sort of thing now.
But, well, I think it's a matter of approach. I think that Nancy Belk had some new ideas and so forth, but she felt the pulse of the campus. Uh-huh. She walked with the faculty. She walked with the staff. She walked with the students, heard them out, heard their ideas and their suggestions and their complaints. And it was highly effective.
Mm-hmm.
I think she had a collegial approach, a very warm approach.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't always get people what they wanted, but I think that they felt mm-hmm. that they'd had a fair hearing
mm-hmm.
and that she was listening, doing the best she could. I think under her leadership, morale was probably at the highest
mm-hmm.
across campus, in my opinion. She was here 3 years, is that right?
Yes.
And 94 to 97.
That's right, 94 to 97. And I think it seems to me that she might have stayed had not our system been headed by the man.
There were some difficulties at the system level mm-hmm. which caused her to look other places, and I think that people of her caliber were very much in demand at that mm-hmm. time across the country. She could have gone several places.
She's still at UNO. I'm from Nebraska.
Are you?
And when you see people from there, they say, "Oh, thank you for giving us Nancy Belk." I mean, they're having terrible financial problems now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Nebraska, less than mm-hmm. a million people, base, for example, and
mm-hmm.
they're having to really cut the budgets and everything. But she's brought in millions of development dollars and
mm-hmm.
new buildings and the faculty love her and
everything. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
She's.
I think that she was followed by David Werner, and I think that he carried on in very much the mm-hmm. same style. Not
mm-hmm.
exactly, but he had, I think, more cordial relationships with the faculty and the staff.
Mm-hmm.
He's a different kind of person, but I think he recognized that those personal approaches, when you're dealing with problems, really pay off in
mm-hmm.
getting things accomplished. And I can't speak for the present leadership, except that I'm hearing good things about it
mm-hmm.
around the community. Apparently, he's at every level. He's made himself known and available and interested in what's going on, all the way from the barbershop in the University Center to the highest levels.
I took the tape recorder into the barber shop.
Did you?
Talked to Terry.
Did you?
While he was cutting my hair.
Recently?
Yeah, about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's good. Terry is one who's been here all these years.
Yeah.
And has an excellent view of what's going on here. He's heard, he hears it all in the barbershop.
Right. And the lady who works there is the daughter-in-law of one of of this Mrs. Lewis that resisted the land sale. So that was fun too.
Yes.
To talk to her.
Yeah. Terry's wife works there too.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've had my hair cut there for 33 years. Only one time I had it cut someplace else. One time was away from the campus, and so I know Terry very well. You know, he has a tremendous sense of, he could be a counselor, and
mm-hmm.
I've heard him advise students and staff and faculty on problems that, he was not trained to do that, but I mean, he just has a sense of being able to evaluate a problem and make a recommendation. He's a neat guy. You mentioned
leadership at the top and perhaps at other levels, I wanted, in that connection, I wanted to mention Charlie Cox. Charlie Cox was here with the, when the campus was first opened, permanent campus, and worked for 25 years. One of the things that he did that I think was very significant, and was he did this on his own, and it was an idea that he developed, was sending out hometown photos to the newspapers. He would take a picture of a student who had accomplished something, or had written something, or achieved something, or in sports, whatever, or just a student from from Peoria who has some unusual program here or something unusual. Take a picture of the student, send it back to the hometown newspaper, and the papers loved it, and they printed those. There were thousands of those pictures published. And just imagine what that did for the university. I mean, that made everybody happy. It made the student happy. It made the family happy. It made his community happy. It made the hometown paper happy to have the news like that. I have one like that. I've used it for years.
It is very good. I've had to record people in noisy places, like stagger in, and it still works.
Okay. Is that enough on leadership style, or?
Well, I wonder if you could tell me something about the relationships of different presidents with the press.
Okay. One of the things that I instituted here, I don't mean to take credit for it, but it was an idea that I had, and it worked pretty well, was to take the presidents to meet with the editorial boards of the various newspapers, primarily the daily papers. And that was very successful. The most of the presidents were very comfortable doing that, and the newspapers appreciated it and enjoyed the opportunity to have that kind of a direct relationship with the university leader. I did that on a regular basis when there was a new president or a new editor. I made sure that they got acquainted. And I think that the presidents generally relied upon University News Service to represent the university with credibility with the press. And we were known for giving the true picture of what was going on at the university. We didn't try to hide things. We didn't advertise our problems. But if there was a problem and the press wanted to know about it, we tried our best to give them a fair report. An example was one time at noon, there was a person with a gun got on the bus at East St. Louis, rode the bus to campus, and went through the classroom buildings brandishing a gun, and the police were called, of course, and he was chased out to the north side of the classroom building out there before he was apprehended. I was at lunch. A lot of the press knew about this before I did because they had their police scanners. And the paper started calling me and said, "Sam, what's going on?" And I said, "Well, you tell me, I don't know." So I was in a situation where we had a good working relationship with the press. We tried our very best to stay close provide their needs mm-hmm. and give them stories that that were accurate and gave them the facts on every situation.
What about Flack and Siguza, the tennis players?
Yes.
I was going to ask you about handling difficult stories, but that was a kind of a national story.
It was a national story, yes. We had a sports information director who was primarily involved with any sports mm-hmm. activity. If it was a major situation, and of course some of the rest of us might get involved, but we had good sports information through those years. I don't recall, nothing pops into my memory about that being
particularly difficult. Okay.
I know we dealt with it. There were a lot of questions. There were was some disagreement at the university level as to how to handle mm-hmm. it. And I think the athletic director lost his job as
yes.
a result of it.
Yes.
But I don't recall the press being in any way hindered or kept away from the story.
Okay.
I mean, we were open about it.
Yes. Well, I saw articles in the Globe and the Post-Dispatch
yes. yeah.
about it, and I wondered if you had given them the information or... I interviewed Cindy Jones, that's why I would
yes.
ask about it. Of course, it was very important in her...
Of course.
Her career was
of
very...
Of course, yeah.
She had to kind of come in and clean it up and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Make the scholar-athlete tradition.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that I'd forgotten about that period.
And you brought me the... I wrote down a few ones that I could remember this morning about difficult events. I know there during John Rendleman, maybe you weren't here yet, there was a professor that ran over a policeman's foot when he was stopped and was making a lot of fuss about the university police.
I've heard that story, but
okay.
I was not here at the time.
Okay. And then you did bring me a clipping about the unpopularity of the vice president
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
during Lazarson's
yeah.
first.
Incidentally,
his first vice president.
I'd like
David
to keep
Warner was
this.
The second.
So I'd
yes.
like for you to return
no,
it.
Well, I can go down and look in the microfilm in the mm-hmm. post myself.
If you want to just copy it,
okay.
that's fine.
Okay, good. Then I'll return it to you. Tell me, where should I mail it?
My mailing address is 365 Barnett Drive, 365 Barnett, B-A-R-N-E-T-T Drive,
mm-hmm.
Edwardsville.
Okay. Well, when I return your interview, I'll return this.
Okay. Do you think you'll have a chance to get a copy of this?
Well, I can get one from Greg Conroy. He has most of the ones. It's kind of a spotty...
I'll loan this to you if you want.
Oh, I'd love to borrow it. I could mail it back sooner to you if you're worried about it. I could probably get it done this weekend and mail it back to you next week.
I'm not worried about how long it takes, but I really think that this article in particular would be helpful.
Okay,
to
good.
You. I want to just leave it with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, okay,
you
thank you. Oh, thank
time.
You so much.
I also have something that I did... when I was here was do a timeline. This is
uh-huh.
not...
Oh, this is wonderful.
You might want to borrow that,
You and
too.
Florence Gillig are
and
just
that,
the
that
greatest.
Well, it doesn't have everything
uh-huh.
on it, of course, but it had a lot of important activities. And Greg Conroy borrowed it recently and added a couple of things at the end.
Uh-huh. That's
good.
It's
chronological, and mm-hmm. Like I said, it doesn't have everything, but it does have some.
Oh,
good.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to have that back also.
Oh, yes, I will send it. I'll send these back as soon as possible.
This was a paper that I put together in 1990, which was based primarily on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a summary, and I don't remember why I did this or where it went. I think it was... But you might want to take a look at that also.
Yes.
That's about basically Lazarson's.
I wonder if if this could be in that booklet of writings or not. Because it would be nice to have, you know, someone who worked with him and write about. Because really, the faculty opinions on that I've interviewed on him are so pretty,
well, I'm sure
pretty negative. But I agree with you that he was really what we needed, and he did great things. And yes. I'm just
there were difficult times in his relationships. There's no question about that. I think he's just so determined to have things happen that sometimes he forgot to be nice to people.
Mm-hmm. Or he just didn't have any tolerance for people who weren't here for the long haul, maybe.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway. Well,
but, you know, there's certainly... You know, I think Nancy Belk was a very effective leader, and uh-huh. You don't hear those kinds of things about her. I mean,
don't.
So, leadership can be achieved in various ways, different uh-huh. strategies for leadership. I always admire people who can be patient and effective in leadership, even in the most difficult of circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think John Rennelman showed that quality when the campus was being threatened.
Uh-huh.
I was not here, that was before I came mm-hmm. here, but there's that picture of John Rennelman in the University Center meeting with the students at the time when there were just mm-hmm. campuses around the country were mm-hmm. revolting, and Carbondale had revolted, and mm-hmm. I think he prevented a revolt here. Mm-hmm. But because of his mm-hmm. approach, he listened to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've interviewed two of the people who occupied his office during that time, and they have very positive memories of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they both, one of them said, well, we didn't want to have something like Carbondale.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any final thoughts here?
I think we've covered pretty much the major things that I'm remembering. As like I said, I've forgotten a lot of things.
Oh,
It's surprising to me. I've been gone 8 years, and uh-huh. it's surprising to me how much the campus has changed in those 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Personnel have changed. So many retirements. Many new programs.
Mm-hmm.
I am talking about values and programs mm-hmm. and mission statement and all that. Those were all developed while I was at New Service. And I think they were, you know, I served on some of the task forces that dealt with
mm-hmm.
some of these things. I know the struggles that went into them, and I really think they had a significant bearing on the future right. of the university. These values, I think, are excellent. You have access to this.
Yes, I do. Sally gave me a copy of the, when I interviewed her, she gave me a copy of the 2006.
Mm-hmm. The mission statement,
mm-hmm.
the new programs that I think it's impressive that I counted up here that during the years that I was here, there were 60 new programs mm-hmm. approved and initiated. Such things as the BFA in Art and Design, mm-hmm. the Master's Program in Art and Design, the International Business Program in School of Business,
mm-hmm.
Human Resource Management, School of Business, Computer Science, Construction, Environmental studies, in foreign language and literature. I was surprised to remember that French, German, and Spanish all came on board in 1976. In the foreign language and literature department. And management information systems, 1990. Marketing research. Mechanical engineering was not established as a program until 1987. In music, there was several things, like jazz performance and musical theater, music history and literature, and nursing, nurse practitioner program, and medical surgical nursing. In political science, there was a Bachelor of Science program authorized in 1974. That was right after I came. In psychology, industrial organizational psychology, community school psychology. In public administration and policy analysis. School psychology. In theater, there's dance and dance performance and design for new programs. And I just added up, there were 60 of those that were initiated in those 25 years. Which to me says that we're growing and developing and becoming a much more comprehensive university.
Yes.
Buildings, the same way in the buildings. I counted up that there were 13 capital projects in that 25-year period, like the Art and Design Building, the Early Childhood Center, the Greenhouse, Founders Hall, the James Metcalf Experimental Theater, there was a struggle for 15 years to get the gymnasium. That was one of the biggest, I don't know if that's come out in any of your interviews or not, but I remember what a struggle that was to get that approved by the legislature. Finally, in 1983, it was open. The campus had been open since 65. And we were using a high school gym in Eversville. Just think what that gym has meant to the university. And then the university park, I remember the criticism that Lazarson got for university park. The Post-Dispatch really took him to task. They said it was a big waste of time. Look at it now. Look what's happening in university park. It took years for that to develop, but it's really paying off, in my opinion.
There's a big move now to get the maintenance money for the corn to ethanol plant.
I saw that.
$1 million a year.
There's an editorial in the Morning Post supporting that.
Yes.
And apparently Michael Madigan, who was the nemesis of the university for all those budget struggle years, is still the roadblock. He's the main one that's opposing that bill.
And I've heard that Glenn Poschert has been to many, many meetings about it.
Sure he has. And the university's fortunate to have him, I think, because he's a person with a lot of political savvy and influence. The university news service was just involved through all those years and almost everything that happened on campus. I always felt that we were not doing an adequate job, that we weren't actually, in spite of all that we did, there was so much more that we didn't cover, that should have been covered. Significant things were happening in various departments. We just couldn't possibly be everywhere all the time. And I think that Greg Conroy has done an excellent job in developing more coverage through the new publications that he's now doing. there's more input from the various departments and schools and colleges and so forth than there ever was before. We had some cases it was almost like pulling teeth to get cooperation. Something very significant could be going on and we wouldn't, the professor wouldn't tell us about it. We'd have to hear about it some other way. And then on the other hand, there were the professors who were always in our door begging us to do something about their project or their program. We had both extremes. Probably the most worthy were the quiet ones that never said anything. And we struggled with that. It was a real struggle to pick up all the news that I knew was going on that we didn't actually have time or the ability to cover. But with the new coverage techniques that are now existent in public affairs with the comprehensive technologies that now exist that has streamlined so much of it, the way they distribute news about the university is totally different. And photography as well, it's totally different. It's one of the areas where there's been amazing changes through computing and various technologies, electronic technologies. But I still think there are a lot of things going on here that need more recognition and coverage, and they get slighted because a professor is modest or withdrawn or doesn't like to deal with the press or whatever. But I really, going back to a question you asked me a while ago about press relations, I think I really felt good about our relations with the press. And before television was coming to campus, television was new in the St. Louis market, and we devised ways to try to get to them. We used our film unit in the University News Service to produce film clips of which we sent to the TV stations. And before they were organized, and I'm talking about union organization at the TV stations, which shut that down eventually, they accepted our clips. Many of our clips that we produced were used in their newscast. That was a very successful strategy for a short time. But we tried our best to try to get the TV stations to come to campus and cover things. And we were fairly successful at that. I remember when Bob Williams, Professor Bob Williams dropped eggs off the Peck building. He challenged the students to package them, and they were limited to the size of the package, to package them so that they could be dropped off that 3- or 4-story building and not break. And that was the analogy was in relation to the moon, the trip to the moon. How do you land on the moon without breaking your landing apparatus and so forth, and crushing the people who are in the capsule? And that, we had a lot of fun with that, and TV stations really picked up on it. But it was a challenge to try to get the TV stations here initially. They would always come when there was some major problem, like the explosion in the chemical lab. Greg Conroy handled that beautifully. And I stayed in the office, and he was at the site, and we communicated back and forth, and his TV stations were all there, and mm-hmm. it was quite a sight. But generally, I just feel that we did have excellent relations with the press and with TV mm-hmm. and radio. We tried our best to keep them informed. We always told them that they were free to ask us about anything. We, mm-hmm. we were not going to hold back on mm-hmm. on sensitive matters. If, mm-hmm. I mean, if we didn't initiate material that was, for whatever reason, was confidential at the time, but we anything that was public information, we made available mm-hmm. to the press. We had excellent press coverage at all the board meetings that were held on campus,
mm-hmm.
and something that we did for a while was take the press to lunch after the board meeting, and we had a little press conference over mm-hmm. lunch, and if they had questions and so forth, we tried to, you know, fill them in on background material and that sort of
uh-huh.
thing over the University Center. That worked pretty well for a while. There was some press would not participate in it. They said, mm-hmm. you know, we were trying to influence their coverage, but that was not the objective. Our objective was to make sure that they had the factual material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of ideas here that nobody else has brought up. All the people I've interviewed.
So I really would commend this to you. You'll find
uh-huh.
this very
okay,
helpful.
Good. I will, I'm sure. I'll take notes on it. I don't make Xeroxes, actually.
Okay.
I take notes and organize them because that's how I remember it. So.
Yes.
Now, you, Mildred Arnold.
Mildred was moved to our office during that reorganization when she was the editor of the alumni publications, and her office, she was working part-time, actually, out of our office. And we worked with her on a number of projects and assisted her with her publications. But that was after the yearbook. And the yearbook, I think the last yearbook was probably about 1970.
Yes.
I'm not sure, but I was always sorry to see that discontinued.
It is 1970.
One of the things that I appreciated so much about it was being able to find a picture of the faculty.
Yes.
some person that I wasn't sure
uh-huh.
who was who, and could look at the yearbook and pick up a picture. That was very helpful.
Yeah. Well, why was she controversial? I ask people about Mildred Arnold, and I get different responses. I have to say, you're the most positive, because I wanted to find out about her. I think this magazine was just beautiful.
Yes.
It was. It's just consistently interesting. I think it would be wonderful for the alumni.
Yes.
But maybe you don't want to talk about that. That's all right.
I can't.
You
know, I really
don't know
can't,
why she
I
was.
I really can't think no. anything okay. of anything. Bad,
okay.
So to speak,
not bad,
about
but just
her. But she was a. I think sometimes people were kind of bored with her. I mean, she was a big talker and carried on a lot in her conversation about things. And one of her habits that was interesting was that she had the ability to anticipate what you were going to say. She read your lips or whatever, and she would say what you were going to say before you said it. It was unbelievable, the ability she had to do that. And some people didn't like that.
Okay.
They were irritated by that.
Okay.
But, and with me, I'm kind of a slow talker anyway, and it was easy for her. She we'd be talking and she'd say what I was planning to say. It was funny, actually. I always thought it was funny. But that was kind of an irritant, I think. She was a very pleasant person. Okay. She was a social person. She was involved with women's clubs and a society person. She played bridge a lot and a fashionable person. She always wore the latest fashion, so she was good friends with board person who was from Centralia. His wife had a fashion shop in Centralia, and she I can't think of the name.
Oh, I can think of it. I know who it is. I've got a lot of notes on
her. But she would go over to Centralia and buy her clothes there. And it was kind of funny. She was always dressed to the hilt. I mean, she was...
Okay.
She didn't wear casual.
Okay.
I always thought she was pleasant, and she didn't want to be corrected. So, I mean, she was an excellent English with English and grammar and all, but all of us make mistakes, and we had a rule in our office that nothing ever went out before another set of eyes had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always me, but someone would review whatever was prepared for errors or grammatical typos or whatever. And invariably, I hated myself when I did, but I'd find a typo in her copy, and she resented my pointing those errors out to her. And she'd always have a big excuse why that happened. She always said, I was tied up with whatever here, and I was that distracted, and that's why I made that mistake. She wouldn't admit to a mistake. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't consider that a real fault. Some people didn't like that, but
okay.
That was one of her characteristics.
Okay. Well.
Beat or the courthouse beat or the education beat or whatever. And I used that strategy to try to get coverage of the university. And I assigned each person in news service a beat, things that they were responsible for to bring in news. And it worked to a degree, but I was never completely satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a real good way to enforce it, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Simpson, you couldn't count on him to ever follow up on anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was an excellent writer when he did, but and when he had a pet project, he did it up very well. But Tommy Walter was an excellent person at covering her beat. I mean, she's very conscientious about it. She would be a good resource.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, I've seen many articles by her.
I think there's three in
yeah.
here.
She wrote a lot for the Alumnus and the Observer later.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
She's been active in the retirement. See, this article here, this first article by her. Would be an excellent resource.
Okay.
And you're going to do Greg Conroy?
Well, I talked to him. Has he been here? He's been here 30 years?
No. He's been here more like 15 to 20.
15 to 20. He's been here rather a short time. I have talked to him, though. And I think he sets a very high standard for his writing, myself. I love the way he writes. And
yes.
I subscribe to his news that he puts out online. The Greg Conroy News.
Here's an article by him here.
Yeah, I have a lot of...
I think he...
I might interview him,
I think,
him
about
too.
1985
okay.
maybe is when he came on
okay.
board.
Well,
that'd
I should
be 20
him.
Years.
Yes, it is, right. I've interviewed some more recent people. I better interview him because people That was such, you have such a wonderful overview of everything. Mm-hmm. I don't, maybe